Hi, my name is Anna Simpson from the University of Washington, and my project is on the response of alpine meadows to nitrogen deposition. So nitrogen deposition is basically the deposition of nitrate and ammonium through either wet deposition or through dry deposition from urban areas or agricultural lands to places where you might not wish them to be, such as fragile ecosystems that are generally nitrogen limited. So this is reactive nitrogen deposition from the year 2000. As you can see, it's mainly concentrated on the east coast of the United States because that's where more industrialization tends to be. But the western United States is increasing its urban populations. We are having, you know, buying more cars. We're doing more agriculture. And so there's fear that nitrogen deposition levels will increase, especially for areas like the alpine of the Cascades and the Sierras, where you generally haven't had high levels of nitrogen before. So some of the symptoms of nitrogen deposition are eutrophication, so increased growth in response to nitrogen, and that can lead to higher levels of nitrification and thus leaching of nitrates into waterways, a loss of diversity, so plants and other species such as the microbial community, the ones that can respond to high levels of nitrogen do well, the ones that are adapted to low nitrogen disappear. And then eventually decreased productivity and acidification. So you get leaching of nitrate, you get loss of base cations. So my project is looking at critical loads for nitrogen deposition, which is basically the level of nitrogen deposition at which significant harm is happening to an ecosystem. And so this is kind of a fuzzy phrase that can be interpreted in different ways, and you can use a lot of different indicators for it. You could use the loss of diversity, you could use the change in a particular species, you could use total community composition change either anyway. So here are some critical loads that have been determined for the alpine. This is from Rocky Mountain National Park, and they found that at 3 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare per year, you get an increase in a particular sedge species. And then they also found that increase in soil solution nitrogen is 9 kilograms per hectare, and for increase in plant available nitrogen, so nitrogen that is accumulating over the growing season in a resin bag or a resin probe that would be available to a plant, they got 13 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare. The only critical load that's been done for the Pacific Northwest alpine is for alpine lakes, and they found a very low critical load for that for a change in a specific diatom. But that was only in one lake did they see this response. So why I'm doing this study, alpine ecosystems are really vulnerable to nitrogen deposition because they're nitrogen limited. They have low productivity. So they have low levels of all microbial activity compared to lowlands, and there are not very many critical loads for nitrogen in the Pacific Northwest. Alpine soils are characterized by a low pH, high ericaceous species content in the Pacific Northwest, and they often have high levels of ash or tephra, especially at two of my sites, it's just covered in ash. And they're also characterized by low decomposition rates and low turnover rates. So the introduction of a small amount of inorganic nitrogen to the system could help microbes access these large stores of organic material that haven't been decomposing. So my project focuses on three things, and I'm doing a fertilization study to look at the effects of increased nitrogen deposition at three sites in the Pacific Northwest. So I'm looking at their effects on the plant and mycorrhizal communities. I'm looking at effects on sinks and sources of inorganic nitrogen, so that includes soil available nitrogen, microbial carbon and nitrogen storage, and plant nitrogen storage, as well as nitrogen fluxes. And then I'm also looking at nitrogen deposition effects on the abundance of nitrifying and nitrogen fixing microbes. So basically the abundance of NFH and MOA. So today I'll be focusing on my results for dissolved organic nitrogen and carbon, inorganic nitrogen pools, and for microbial levels of carbon and nitrogen. So the rationale behind why I'm looking at microbial carbon and nitrogen is based on the work that's been done at Rocky Mountain National Park, the famous Niwot Ridge that is the most studied ridge I have ever seen. And so after the many, many years of them studying nitrogen deposition effects in this ridge, they've come up with kind of a model for how they think nitrogen cycling is acting in the alpine. And so they say, okay, during the summer you have plants taking up nitrogen, you have bacteria feeding on root exudates. Then in the fall you have this deposition of carbon material from the plants, and so you get bacteria and fungi feeding on that carbon and sucking up nitrogen, so you get a mobilization. And then in the winter you have no plant competition for nitrogen, and so they actually think that microbial biomass peaks during the winter time as you get maybe under the snowpack areas where you're not going below zero, you're well insulated by snow. And then in the spring you get snow melt and a flushing out of that organic nitrogen that's been accumulating through in microbial biomass during the winter, and so you get a crash where you get dissolved organic nitrogen coming out into the soil and making itself available to plants. And so they found that the fluxes between microbial biomass and soil inorganic matter and soil inorganic nitrogen and soil organic matter nitrogen were by far the largest fluxes in this system. The fluxes from atmospheric deposition between litter and plants and snow were all tiny compared to this. So that's why I thought it would be interesting to look at how microbial biomass is changing in response to increase in deposition. So my treatment scheme, I have three sites at Mount Rainier, North Cascades, and Olympic National Parks. They're all at about 6,300 feet. And at each site, I have five blocks situated along a ridgeline, and I have four plots per block. And so for each of those four plots, I have a different treatment level. I have 0, 3, or 5 or 10 kilograms per hectare per year of ammonium nitrate. And then I'm also fertilizing using N15. So for some of the plots, I'm using the N15 label on the ammonium ion, and then some of them I'm using the N15 label on the nitrate ion. So in this way, I hope to get a look at which ion is being preferentially taken up by which species, and also by the microbial community. So my sites are Paradise Meadows at Mount Rainier, Sahali Arm at North Cascades, and Lillian Ridge at Olympic. As I said, they're all at about 6,300 feet elevation. Mount Rainier and North Cascades are dominated by heather species, Cassiope mertensiana and Phyllodacy impetriformis, and lupin and Vaccinium deliciosum. And they're both very volcanic soils. Mount Rainier has experienced a lot of relatively recent pumice events, whereas the ash at North Cascades is finer. It's wind deposited rather than being near to an eruption. And then Lillian Ridge at Olympic is very different parent material. It's basalt, no evidence of ash that I can see, and it's dominated by sedges with some patches of heather and lupin. So here you can see me fertilizing with my sprayer from Lowe's a patch of heather at Olympic. And so then average pHs for these soils, Mount Rainier is the highest at 5.1, North Cascades is at 4.8, and Lillian Ridge is at 4.4. And then each of the sites is situated, the blocks are situated along a ridge line that goes from the northwest to the southeast. So background monitoring, I monitor temperature, pH, and ambient nitrogen deposition. So here is nitrogen deposition that I monitored using deposition collectors, so that's the ugly black funnel there. And these are calculated to stand in for year-round deposition, even though I only have these out for the summer. And just to compare how much this is not estimating annual nitrogen deposition correctly, this is nitrogen deposition at Mount Rainier year-round. I'm not allowed to have deposition collectors at Mount Rainier. They have their own monitoring program. And then this is what it looks like if you're estimating it based on only on summer values. So you can see that using just the summer values can grossly overestimate nitrogen deposition, so the actual nitrogen deposition at these places is probably a lot lower. And then I'm measuring nitrogen deposition through snow melt using snow lysimeters, and so I'm getting levels of about 4 kilograms per hectare of total nitrogen, not just inorganic, in the snow melt. And this is just showing, you know, differences between low elevation and high elevation nitrogen deposition levels and why I don't feel comfortable using the national park monitoring data that's coming from the lowlands, that the highlands can have huge variability in nitrogen deposition. Here's under the soil temperatures for the three sites. You can see Olympic is melting out sooner than the other two sites, and it has a lot greater variability of temperature during the summer. And this may be important in the results I found in the nutrient cycling. So for carbon and nitrogen content in the soils, this is from the first year of this study. So North Cascades actually has the highest levels of carbon and the highest C to N ratios, whereas Olympic, actually surprisingly, because when you look at this area, it's very dry, plant cover is very sparse compared to the very lush Mount Rainier and North Cascades, it has the highest levels of nitrogen in the soil by far and the lowest C to N ratios. So these are from 2014 levels of inorganic nitrogen. So I didn't find any significant difference between treatments. I sampled in the mid-growing season in August and then at the end of the growing season in late September, early October at all three sites. And so there was no difference in treatment in either of those sampling times. There were some visible differences in the data between the middle of the growing season and the end of the growing season. There seemed to be a decrease in inorganic nitrogen. So this is ammonium here. You can't probably read that. And this is nitrate. Wow, I just took up a lot of time. But because the variability at Olympic is so high, you can't really say that there is a decrease. These are aerobic incubations from last year, so you can see that at Olympic, there is high levels of mineralization of both nitrate and ammonium compared to Mount Rainier and North Cascades, which indicates maybe Olympic is not nitrogen limited. It has high content of organic nitrogen in the soil that microbes are not accessing. And so comparing the levels, the scales are different. So you can see that even... So I did my incubations in the lab, and they had ample moisture, and they were at a good temperature. Compared to nitrification at Rocky Mountain National Park, the levels are extremely low. And then this is the only significant result I've seen between treatments is nitrate and ammonium flux into the soil. So these are plant root simulator probes that simulate a plant root sitting in the soil, taking up nitrogen ions throughout the season. And so they do have, there is a significant effect on treatment of available nitrogen to plants. Dissolved organic carbon and dissolved organic nitrogen data from 2014. So this is the midsummer data, and this is the end of the season sampling. And then the scale from the x-axis is showing treatment level. So there were no differences in treatment level between dissolved organic carbon and nitrogen, and there were no visible effects of treatment level on microbial biomass, carbon or nitrogen. But I did see a very much higher levels of microbial biomass in general at Olympic versus North Cascades and Mount Rainier. And so you can kind of see at Olympic has enough difference between the middle of the growing season and the end of the growing season that you can see some kind of immobilization, a decrease in dissolved organic nitrogen and an increase in microbial biomass nitrogen at the end of the growing season. So what I did find interesting is I have these huge error bars at Olympic for microbial biomass. So I went and looked at the data. So I didn't find any significant treatment effects on soil nitrogen. No, did find significant treatment effects on soil influx. What I did find interesting is the presence of heather at Olympic correlates with low microbial carbon and nitrogen. So this is my Olympic data separated into plots that do have heather and do not have heather. So the green is are the plots that do have heather, the blue are the plots that do not have heather. And so you can see there, especially in the microbial carbon and nitrogen, there's a great decrease in the amount of microbial biomass that you have. So I'm interested in looking at, okay, I have these huge error bars for Olympic. Maybe the reason I have these very low levels at Mount Rainier and North Cascades of all types of nitrogen, and I'm getting these low levels of nitrogen and microbial biomass in some of my plots, is because of the presence of heather. So ideas for why this is happening: phenolics suppressing microbial activity and nitrogen uptake. Maybe heather is just taking up a lot of nutrients and suppressing microbial activity that way. Or maybe it's because the nitrogen is getting trapped in recalcitrant plant tissue and litter, and that's the main sink of nitrogen in the heather plots. So when I get my 15N data back for heather foliage, that should shed some light on this issue. And I'd like to thank Darlene Zabowski, my PI, and Gina Ropert, the NPS science advisor who's on my committee. Any questions?